Okay, everyone is there. We are back in session, and our next item up here is the fire season update. So I'm going to welcome back Doug Graff and Mr. Graham are going to present, and you can take it from here. Thank you.
Thank you, Chair Kelly, members of the board, State Forester Hirsch. For the record, my name is Doug Graff. I serve as Chief of Fire Protection with the Department of Forestry. This is your routine informational item along fire season that we provide for a fire season update. And I will turn to Ron Graham, Deputy Chief Fire Operations, to provide that briefing. Thank you, Ron.
Thank you, Doug. Good morning, Chair Kelly, members of the board, State Forester Hirsch. For the record, my name is Ron Graham. I serve as the Deputy Chief of Operations for the Fire Protection Division here at the Oregon Department of Forestry. Pleasure once again to give you a fire season update. I'll highlight kind of the changes since we last spoke, current activity, and what we expect to see here in the future. Next slide, please. I'll spend a moment talking about the current situation in terms of some of the records of this year. And currently we are approaching day 80 at preparedness level 4. And day 57 at preparedness level 5, the highest preparedness level. That's a record. I think they're both records. The PL5 record goes back to 2017. That was a challenging season for us, as well as the eclipse year. There's less than 50 days consecutive at PL5, so we're well beyond that. And we're approaching two solid months at preparedness level 5. I think you're all aware of the stress in the system that creates. That indicates that nationally and regionally, firefighting resources are heavily committed. When you're looking for anything from a firefighter to an incident management team, it's kind of like playing go fish and you're kind of out of luck. You have to really utilize the resources and relationships that you have at that point. Little has changed in terms of our energy release components. They remain around the record high areas, as well as our 1,000-hour fuels remain at record low areas. Those have certainly challenged us this year, as well as the live fuel moistures that have been at near record lows as well. It's been an extremely busy year for us here at ODF. Our incident management teams have deployed 7 times. That equates to 92 days out on incidents for those team members collectively. That's a lot of time away from families and away from our day job responsibilities, especially given the competing priorities we have and expectations now. But that's where the folks that are back at the home offices pick up the extra workloads, and we bring in extra help when needed to continue that work. In terms of the drought, the slide you see here is the drought map. This is not a wildfire risk map like you talked about in the previous session. This is the current drought status and signifies the status of drought across the counties. One thing that does correlate is, we have had problem fires in these areas of the exceptional drought as well as other areas. We've seen that influence early on this fire season as, again, our fuel moistures really dried out quickly. Control problems, intensity, fire intensity, and long duration fires. Those are all things that are often complicated when we do have extreme drought. And typically when we're in years of extreme drought, those are busy, challenging years for us. And that just kind of stands for me. As of September 2nd, you can see all of Oregon is in some kind of drought status. 27% is in that darkest colored exceptional drought. 50% in extreme drought, 22% in severe drought, and only 1%. In moderate drought. 21 counties have official drought declarations, and at least one more requested. I believe there might be an additional one since this presentation was put together as well. The good news is what is changing is there's a little bit of hope on the horizon, and I'll talk to that a bit in the future with the weather slides. Next slide, please. Currently, though, we see a little bit of that relief showing up. As you recall, the June, July, and August significant wildfire potential outlooks had most of the state in red with that increased above normal chance of significant wildfire potential. We're starting to see a little bit of a reprieve as you look at far southeastern Oregon. Some of that's due to the nature of the fuels there, the shorter days, the recoveries at night. But make no mistake, as I mentioned at the Emergency Fire Cost Committee, when I see a white area surrounded in above normal fire potential, I'm a little hesitant in thinking that that's going to be definitely the case. The conditions are very similar. Fuels is perhaps the driving factor in that. Next slide, please. As I mentioned, a little bit of reprieve on the horizon. Please note, these are the 8 to 14 day outlooks for temperature and precipitation. In the 6 and 10 day slides, which I don't have displayed on here, there was little change. We are still seeing pretty much normal to above normal temps overall with below normal precipitation. But when we look out in the 8 to 14 day outlooks, we start to see a little bit of a change in the probability of some normal and slightly below normal temps up in far northwestern Oregon. So this is the first real look at some change, kind of 17th, 18th, even 19th, 20th of September timeframe. Also, if you look at the bottom slide, you'll see the precipitation outlook for that same time. Normal for the southeast kind of third slice of the state there, and slight chances of some above normal precipitation in that far outlook. We're hearing a little bit of conflicting information as far as how much rainfall we'll actually see. What it does look like is probability of some wetting rains over a broader area. It doesn't look like any kind of season ending event or anything like that yet, as we look towards that kind of, two-thirds of the way through September mark. So not much precipitation on the horizon. It's going to be pretty scattered. There are some chances for some scattered storms and systems coming in. Slight chances of lightning with some of that, slight chances of precipitation, but nothing significant. Again, what we are seeing is we're seeing shorter days, a little bit more favorable weather, a little bit cooler weather at night. I know over the weekend down in Lapine, some of that country, it was down in the mid-30s, and at least better humidity recovery, you know, than we were experiencing through the height of fire season. Next slide, please. So we've been under heightened fire danger all season. We've been working very closely with our partners at Keep Oregon Green, the Office of State Fire Marshal, our federal partners, landowner and industry, to try to regulate human activity, to try to prevent new fires from starting. ODOT is a key partner in that with their visual reader boards along the interstate system. And in August, we employed those to let folks know about the extreme fire danger. That's been a great partnership and a great way to get the word out and try to prevent those human-caused fires from occurring. Next slide, please. Taking a little bit of a look at some of the fire activity since we spoke last, this is the Fox Complex, which was comprised of the Patton Meadow fires and the Willow Valley fire. Both were lightning-caused fires, one kind of southeast of Klamath, the other one right outside of Lakeview. Patton Meadow was right outside of Lakeview. They had a storm roll through. They put down two lightning strikes, and two fires immediately resulted from those two lightning strikes. It was one of those kind of dramatic situations where you could see the indicator of the strike, and we had two positive confirmations of fires. Patton Meadows posed the biggest threat, obviously, and you can see the fire behavior there, another challenging fire in Lake County. We did have to employ an ODF incident management team, so one of those seven deployments. This was Team 3 Link Smith IC, and this fire did qualify for a FEMA Fire Management Assistance Grant due to the threat to, you know, Lakeview and surrounding communities. The Patton Meadow fire grew to 8,930 acres, a lot of that growth very quickly. And the Willow Valley fire was held at 824 acres, and that was all primarily on BLM land just above the California border. No threat to, you know, public or values at risk, infrastructure, and homes. This is great work, challenging fire, great management by our ODF team. And that is a theme you will hear me say throughout this, is the success of our ODF incident management teams. They did deploy seven times over 90 days, but they're at home right now. They're all resting, and they're ready for the next challenge should we have it, despite the long season. So our teams go in, they fight fire safely and aggressively, we embrace our industry landowner partners. We work at night where safe and where we can do the work we need to do with favorable conditions. And our goal is to put fires out. And this year we've done that. Fires on ODF jurisdiction are not on the map right now. So that's good news for us. Next slide, please.
Ron, Doug here. Largely, you're coming in very clear, but you're breaking up here and there. So just maybe closer attention to the microphone. Thanks.
Copy that. Thank you. Next one is the Skyline Ridge Complex. Skyline Ridge was declared 100% contained on August 30th. This was in Douglas Forest Protective Association jurisdiction. There was 19 lightning fires in this fire complex. They started on August 1st. Skyline Ridge Complex was 5,760. Again, another one of those examples of our ODF incident management team coming in, doing the work, getting these fires off the landscape so that resources could be shared and allocated elsewhere. Next slide, please. This fire is the Cedar Butte fire up in Tillamook on the Tillamook State Forest. Really challenging ground. What you don't see on the backside of that ridge is some pretty significant steep slopes, rocky country, nasty ground to try to put firefighters in. This fire had conditions lined up a little more with the weather. Certainly could have gone over the top and gone on and on to the next ridge and been another incident management deep fire impacting our jurisdiction. This one was on August 13th and was held at 74 acres. A local Type 3 incident management team and group, primarily out of Northwest Oregon, was successful on this fire. So another great piece of work by ODF resources. Our severity resources contributed significantly here as well. All right, be able to go to the next slide. Oh, I think we might have skipped one, perhaps. No, we're good. All right, go back. That's fine. So this is a great picture. This is one of the two fire bosses that were part of the new addition to our severity resource program under the special purpose appropriation with the added general fund money that we received this year. These two fire bosses are single engine air tankers that are available to land and scoop from water sources. We had those stationed at the Dells. This is the Chenoweth Rim fire, and you're looking at Chenoweth Rim. This was on August 31st. This is right across the street, essentially from our Dells office, right behind an apartment complex. This started on federal lands. From the quick response with our ODF severity resources, ODF ground resources, federal, state, and local partners, despite heavy evacuations and pretty extreme fire behavior, they were able to help hold this fire at 50 acres, keep this one off the landscape as well. Our severity resources this year have flown over 1,300 hours. That's a significant number of hours. That includes our large air tanker that we added, the next generation large air tanker to our fleet this year. The large air tanker has flown almost 100 hours already. Of those 1,300 plus hours, almost 700 hours are flown on federal incidents, supporting our federal partners, looking out for ODF jurisdiction and protection, helping them be successful. When we share our resources across boundaries like that, we do recover the costs for those incidents in those flight hours. So that's, good partnership as we have those resources available. We did also call on a National Guard to support our severity program. National Guard helicopters flew 150 hours, as well as we employed their firefighting hand crews, traffic control safety points on the Rough Patch fire. And those folks on the Rough Patch fire, they'll be ending their mission on the 10th of September here. And that will mark the release of all Oregon National Guard personnel from our incident. So that's good news from them as they have current missions to support COVID-19. We relied heavily on partners from states all over the country. Last count I saw was almost 47 states had been in the state of Oregon represented. We had direct relationships with the state of Michigan, Florida, New Mexico, Alaska, and several of our other compact state partners. The Office of State Fire Marshal, our industry partners, landowners, contract firefighters, local firefighters, all played an important part in keeping these fires off the landscape and becoming the next large fire on the landscape. Next slide, please. So as of yesterday's date, the September 7th date of fires on ODF protection for year to date. You can see our key performance measure, we're at 94%, slightly below our average of around 95. Our target is 98, keeping fires at 10 acres or less. You can see we've had over 190 lightning fires, over 166,000 acres burned due to lightning. That is more than normal trend. Lightning tends to be the driver of our acres burned. Last year, recall, that was a little bit of an anomaly because of the human-caused fires that we saw during Labor Day. Human-caused fires continue to rise. We're over 800 human-caused fires this year for 26-plus thousand acres, approaching 1,000 fires. And actually, today's data, I did see we are over the 1,000 fires mark, so we're above our 10-year average, which is 806 fires. We've almost burned 194,000 acres this year. A large part of that's been in that Klamath Lakeview area with the Bootleg Fire, the Patton Meadow Fire, and I'll give you an update on some new activity in that area. So again, looking at almost 1.5 times more human-caused fires this year, looking at over 2.5 times more total acres burned this year than our 10-year average. So again, challenging fire season. We continue to see new starts, and I'll highlight some of that activity here shortly. Next slide. So this is a map of kind of the current large fires on the landscape, if you would, in primarily western Oregon. And you can see it starts up north with the Bull Complex, on the Mount Hood and a little bit on the Willamette National Forest, currently at almost 18,000 acres. We've got great engagement with our North Cascades District personnel, industry, and landowner personnel trying to secure interests. That's nestled in between the Beachy, Riverside, and Lion's Head Fire. We've been watching it closely. It's been, you know, contributing smoke into the valley, up into, you know, Multnomah County and whatnot. So far, you know, they're getting a little bit of break in the weather. Most of the firefighting strategy and tactics have been dictated by, you know, fuels, tough conditions that have required firefighters to put an indirect fire line and then burn out off of those fire lines to secure those lines. That's a great strategy given the ground they're working in. They're continuing to make progress. So a lot of the growth on these fires, a good portion of it contributes to those firefighting strategies. They've been using, you know, tactics at night, doing a lot of that firing at night when conditions, as I mentioned, have improved and are a little bit more favorable to the kind of burning they want to do. That's currently 7% contained and it's 12 miles northeast of Detroit. Moving down next to the Middle Fork Complex. And the Middle Fork Complex started back in late July, July 29th, currently 26,000 acres. Some of the fires are centered just 9 miles north of Oak Ridge, 20% contained. Again, similar strategies and tactics employed on the Middle Fork Complex. There is progress being made. We do see these containment numbers going up. You know, a lot of the activity and direct action has been around keeping private lands from being impacted, protecting communities, keeping the fires off our jurisdiction, and been engaged with that. One single fire, the Chaos Fire, was fairly active yesterday, and that's going to have some action taken on it here in the coming days. Next down the list is the Rough Patch and Jack Complex. Again, these fires primarily burning on Forest Service jurisdiction. There was little threat to some private protection with Douglas Forest Protective Association lands. Fires at complexes at about 35% contained on the Rough Patch and 55% contained on the Jack Fire. The Rough Patch is centered around southeast of Cottage Grove, and then the Jack Fire is just east of Clyde. Rough Patch is currently at over 43,000 acres, while the Jack Fire is almost 24,000 acres. These continue to pose some challenges. There's been several fires that have burned together. They continue to try to connect some of the smaller fires and use some of the lines that are already established on those to be able to contain these. You know, currently, we're watching some of the threats there. We've had our landowner partners engaged on these as well. And then last but not least, I'd like to highlight the Devil's Knob Complex, existing fires. And we just said goodbye to the Florida Red Team, a Type 1 incident management team that's no stranger to the state of Oregon. Rick Dolan is the incident commander. Rick came out last year, as he does most years, Rick took over the Echo Mountain fire last year as the incident commander for us when we had most of our teams deployed. Rick and his team continued to do good work on the Devil's Knob complex, set that next team up for pretty good success to take over that fire. It's 35% contained, 30 miles southeast of Roseburg at almost 60,000 acres. Similar strategy and tactics going on that complex as well. And then kind of the new activity as of last night, we had some definite activity over in Lakeview again. There was a new fire start, the Cougar Peak Fire. When you look at the map, the Cougar Peak Fire maybe appears it's very, very close to Patton Meadows. However, all indications are this was a new fire start, and it is primarily on Forest Service lands, approximately 3,000 acres, less than about 5% ODF protection involved there. There has been a Pacific Northwest Type 2 team ordered, and they will show up and get in brief later today and take over command of that in the next couple of days. Significant fire activity, most pictures through nighttime activity, had very active burning. There's a lot of wind influence in that country, and the wind was definitely driving and dictating where that fire was going. At the same time, approximately 5:30 at night last night, our Southwest Oregon district was dispatched to the Fielder Creek fire. And this was just northwest of the city of Rogue River. This fire actually caused significant concern for us. This was all on ODF protection, given its proximity to the city of Rogue River and the surrounding subdivisions. There was homes immediately threatened. This fire had high potential. Fortunately, you know, we had our severity resources and district resources in place for a heavy and efficient ODF response out of the Southwest Oregon District. Our large air tanker was actually en route to the Cougar Peak fire and diverted because of the higher priority risk to life and homes over to the Fielder Creek fire. Great typical fashion of Southwest Oregon District firefighting. They stopped that fire at 32 acres. They've got it lined. They're going to get that thing mopped up and put it in check and keep that one off the map. So really great work with no structure loss. And we did see a fire Saturday near Lapine, Walker Range, and federal agencies were on that fire, and it too was a great stop. Homes were immediately threatened. We had FEMA potential. There's a couple subdivisions kind of immediately in the path of that fire. They held that fire to 50 acres. So again, another significant stop. Zero structures lost. So great firefighting in challenging conditions, as we've seen. So we continue to support our federal firefighters. As I mentioned, our incident management teams are resting. We stay really engaged with these fires that you see on the map. We have had multiple engagements from our districts, landowners, and industry. We continue to support the strategies that are being employed. We are really pleased to see these fires and the teams embracing night shifts, burning out and getting containment lines and containment increased. And we've really, really been pleased with the embracing and welcoming of ODF and partner resources into these interagency incident management teams on predominantly federal fires. Next slide, please. I'll turn it over to Chief Doug Graff to talk a little bit about the finance impacts for this fire season.
Thank you for that comprehensive report, Ron. I'll touch finances briefly and turn it back to Ron to speak safety as we close out the briefing this morning. This graph represents the last a 10-year average of our finances and the current year 2021 against that 10-year average. And I think critically important is a recognition of the gross fire costs. These are the full costs of fire season that the department will expend on the suppression fires across Oregon on our jurisdiction. Responsibility and in partnership with our federal partners, and that sets at close to $63.8 million on a 10-year average for gross costs. And this year, we are currently showing $117.6 million gross costs. So certainly significant fire season relative to our 10-year average. The net costs on this map, our 10-year average is sitting at $28.8 million, and the net cost represents now the average when you factor in recoveries from FEMA eligible fires, and then the federal patent of fires that we participate in and get 100% reimbursement for those resources. And our net costs to date currently sets at $57.95 million. And both of those numbers really matter to the department, obviously, because carrying the debt of the full cost of gross is important to the cash flow of the agency. And then the net costs is how that is distributed in terms of how does the state fund fire protection, large fire suppression effort. I'll use the next slide to detail that. So next slide, please. So as we look at our net costs, this chat simply helps with the description of where those large fire costs are consumed from. And I'll start from the right to the left on this slide because this slide offers two contexts. One, it provides the framework of who pays for a large fire and under what structure. And it also is a tool for the insurance policy, which I'll speak to on this slide, as it will factor in last fiscal year's costs, given the reality that we initiate our insurance policy on April 15th of every year. So moving from right to left, you can see the total net cost once again from the first slide is at $57.95 million. And the structure for the policies for the fire season is we have a $50 million deductible before we reach the insurance policy. So the second bar from the left, that $7.95 million, is our estimate of what we are into the Lloyd's of London catastrophic insurance policy at this time. So we're estimating $7.95 million above the deductible into the policy, and we have been in close communication with Department of Administrative Services, who serves as the state's purchaser of the policy, our brokers, and the Lloyd's of London's adjusters for this policy, and have put on an early notice for a potential claim. The $57 million of net costs is also distributed across the general fund. So there's a $30 million column, the next bar chart to the left. And then the first $20 million of the $50 million deductible split between general fund and the Oregon Forest Land Protection Fund, which is articulated in both green, the general fund, and then the red, the Oregon Forest Land Protection Fund. So this highlights the structure of who pays for the deductible and then the insurance policy. As you can see above, both the insurance policy and the deductible, so above $75 million, we have not experienced costs there because the policy itself is a $25 million policy. The other important factor in this slide is a recognition is to the far left past the dotted line, is a recognition that we're seeing more and more large fire costs associated with last fiscal year, and that $11.73 million is a general fund obligation because we passed last fiscal year the split between the general fund and the Oregon Forest Land Protection Fund. So that dollar amount is really is incorporated into the $30 million of general fund in that purple bar. So this structure really, this tool serves a couple purposes as we speak to the insurance policy that they see where the deductible is coming from, and it also offers us the structure of funding. With that, I move to the next slide to close on the safety aspect of fire season. Back to Ron.
All right, thank you, Chief Graff. Before I get into a quick little bit of details on this, just as we've experienced, recognized, and remember the one-year anniversary of the Labor Day fires, as I present this safety data, there's a good trend in our safety record, and once again, would like to highlight our safe and aggressive firefighting and ODF's commitment to safety. Our safety manager here at ODF, David Grimm, provides this information to the Protection Division, and we get this reported every year. These statistics do lag behind a little bit. These are reported over our fiscal year time periods. Over the five-year period demonstrated and displayed here above, total hours worked varied from its lowest in 2018, as you can see, and that was at about 1.55 million hours to this year, the highest in the five-year period at 1.77 million hours. That's roughly a 7.5 increase from lowest to highest. So as we've seen significant increases in exposure, next slide, I'm pleased to see that we have not seen significant increases in injuries. So for the most part, our injury claims are typically correlated to the amount of time that our employees are working. As I said, you would think typically the more hours and exposure worked, the more injuries and claims. But we've had great attention to safety, and we have been able to keep injuries in check this year. And we are currently sitting at 61 injuries for this fire season, 2018. So remember this, 2018, from the previous slide, fiscal year 2018 was the lowest exposure hours, but it was the highest injuries, 81. This year we had the highest exposure hours, and we are sitting at 61 injuries, which is very close to last year. And you can see over the last 5 years, 6 years, it is tied for, you know, arguably second lowest. So good safety record once again. Next slide, please. Our claim frequency rate, this is typically based on the number of hours worked and the number of hours, number of injury claims in a given fiscal year. This is the standard way injuries are reported, and they're reported by per 200,000 hours worked. So for this year, 2021, there's 6.9 injuries per 200,000 hours worked. In 2020, it was a similar year as far as number of hours and claims, 7.61 injuries per 200,000, and back in fiscal 19, 8.32 injuries per 200,000. Our five-year average is 8.15 injuries per 200,000 hours worked, and again, we're at 6.9 for this year. So we're seeing a trend downward in our claim frequency rate. We're doing really well on the number of injuries and accidents, and yet despite a record year here for number of hours worked. Our top causes of injuries kind of remains the same as what it's been throughout time here. Sprains and strains, slips, trips, and falls, objects in the eyes, inhalation, ingestion of smoke, poison oak, insect and animal bites. And then lastly, of course, we've had the last couple of years to deal with COVID-19 as well. Once again, like last year, we've employed our COVID mitigation measures on our ODF fires. And once again, pleased to say we've had 11 positive cases on ODF managed large incidents. So we're doing really good there. We did great keeping people safe, providing mitigation measures with masks, hand sanitizers, treating our food situation like we did with boxed meals, keeping people as segregated and socially distant as we could while they safely did their jobs. So once again, a great safety record. We do like to highlight this towards the end of fire season just to give the board a little bit of an idea on where we're at in the given year. That won't be some time until, you know, this out and finalized. Next slide. Just in closing, looking at our complete coordinated system, and once again thanking all the local, state, federal partners, industry partners, landowner partners, contract firefighting resources, our compact states and provinces, all that it takes to make the Oregon complete coordinated fire protection system, and of course our ODF and association employees, and support from the Board of Forestry. With that, we turn it over for any questions.
I think you're muted, Jim.
I see that Brenda has a question.
I think Carla was before me. Carla, go ahead. Oops, you're muted, Carla.
Thank you. Twofold question. I was down on the Sky Ridge or the Skyline Ridge fire, and a couple of things that really caught my attention is we had put in for 35 to 40 heavy equipment operators, and we're only able to get 12. And I think every business out here realizes just how short labor is. And I want to be sure the board, as we look at all of these fires, that we have a really good understanding of how short we are on total labor capacity in terms of trying to meet the demand of, you know, increased demand of these fires. And I think that along with that, we're really going to need to put the, you know, focus down on capital labor substitution in light of not being able to get the labor we need. So I'd just like to really highlight that as a, we need more information on how short we are. My second question, and I don't expect an answer, but I would like today, but I would like to take a deeper look at this. It strikes me we've spent $250 million on premium payments for this insurance policy over the last 10 years. And I'd like a good analysis of how much we've collected since we've now been through 10 of our highest fire years, and maybe have our financial team give us a reality on, or a good financial analysis on this fire insurance.
Okay, I'm going to second Carla's suggestion. I've been thinking along the same lines that certainly as we're going to probably face increasing premiums, there does need to be an assessment of how well this is working for us over the long term. Brenda, you've got a question.
Yeah, thank you, Jim. Brenda McComb for the record. First of all, thanks for the very detailed overview. And I just want to ask a question about the safety component. Thank you for doing such a great job keeping people safe. It sounds like despite all the risks that people face, that the injuries have not increased as expected. And I think I heard you say that relative to COVID, you're encouraging people to wear masks and use hand sanitizer, but I don't think I heard anything regarding vaccinations. And I'm wondering whether that's something that is being addressed or could be addressed.
Chair Kelly, Doug Graff here. Thank you.
Thank you,
Brenda, for the question. The vaccinations certainly for employees are required October 18th. Relative to fire camp, we have been requiring the masks and social distancing as part of our best management practices, which were adopted in 2020 at the start of the pandemic with all of our partners. Did that answer the question for you?
No, not entirely, but thank you, Doug. I'm wondering if vaccinations can be made available to all of the fire workers.
Copy. Thank you for the follow-up. Yes, early on in the vaccination eligibility, wildland fire and structural fire were made available early on, past a few other sectors, elderly and susceptible individuals. We were early on in the vaccinations and had that made available to us prior to this fire season. So that was prior to the heat of the fire season. That was early this spring.
So I guess Doug, maybe I apologize if I'm not clear. Within the fire camps, is there a facility in each camp that will provide vaccinations to fire workers?
Tracking. I'm with you now. Thanks for the follow-up. Currently, we are not providing vaccinations at fire camp. The eligibility is still available for individuals interested in that through the local counties. One of the challenges as we've considered implementing a program like that is the follow-up sickness that can occur. And the downtime that would follow up with vaccinations, depending on how people respond to that vaccination.
Great, thank you, Doug.
McComb, if I could follow up just a bit on that as well. Another thing is logistics. We have established vaccination sites already, and that's where we direct our firefighters to go should they express interest. Instead of trying to replicate, set up all the logistics and all the things that need to be in place to safely do the vaccinations, we have vaccines available, we have sites open, and we can easily redirect those firefighters to those pre-established sites.
Great. Thank you, Ron. It just seems to me that given the circumstances, even though you're working outside, using all tools in the toolbox to be sure that people are safe would be just a good idea. Thank you, then.
Okay, we're running a little over time here. Joe, have you got a quick question?
Real quick. Appreciate the safety rundown. I think past board member Mike Rose, really appreciate that. And I really also appreciate your attention to talk about severity resources and what you brought up in Southwest, what happened there. I think that's a very big deal as a landowner, and I just want to make sure the board understands how much of a big deal that is with us severity resources. I guess I would like, as just kind of a follow-up, and I don't expect an answer right now, would be somewhat more of a breakdown of the severity resources to remind the board how that's being paid for out of the fund, out of the Forest Protection Fund, and also how you're sharing those resources and how that overall business is working together. I think it's really important. That's been a very valuable tool that's been used to buy time, to fight fires out, like you talked about in Southwest with their resources. And I'd like to more understand, make sure we understand how that's being paid for and how that's all, those resources are being shared and kind of that whole business, if you will, that whole part of our business and how that's working, Doug and Ron. I appreciate that.
Okay. Well, I think we'll wrap this up, and I'm also was thinking about Mike Rose, our former board member, who always brought up the issue of safety, and thinking about how happy Mike would be to hear those safety numbers. So, congratulations to you guys on that. And with that, I think we do need to move on to the next agenda item here. Unless there's any other quick questions or comments.